This is Breakfast on 91.3 FM, your voice in the morning. Of course, this is Breakfast on the Voice of the Cape. Now, New York City has become the epicenter of coronavirus in the US with over 47,000 cases. New York's COVID-19 death count more than doubled in 72 hours to 1,941 as of Wednesday. The pandemic has forced millions of New Yorkers into their homes as local and state government enforce another 30-day stay-at-home order to try and flatten the curve. This morning we want to catch up with a Capetonian living in New York, Professor Marcel Mentor, who is originally from Akasa and has been in New York for the past 15 years. She is a professor at the Teachers College at Columbia University, and she joins us now. Bearing in mind, of course, that it's probably just after 2 a.m. there in New York. Professor, thank you so much for your time this morning on Breakfast 91.3 FM.
You're very welcome. I'm very excited to be able to speak with you this morning.
Prof, let's start off quickly. You are currently in lockdown. Now, we're used to seeing the Big Apple bustling with people and traffic. Paint us just a very quick picture as to what the city currently looks like right now.
Right. So everybody is supposed to be mandated to stay at home, only to come out for medical or food supplies if they need to, and then what they term essential services people, right? So the buses are running and the trains are running on weekend services, so there is a limited number of buses and trains working. And most people are staying indoors for the most part and just coming out for short periods of time. Today, they mandated that everybody who comes outside, they've revised their take on whether we should be wearing masks outside. And so now we've been told that even if we go outside, we should have masks, we should have a 6-foot difference. I don't know what that looks to me like. It's about a meter and a half, I guess.
Yeah.
Distance between people. And so the social distancing is really quiet. And so I haven't been back down to Times Square since I've been in at home. We've been locked down for the last 3.5 weeks now. And so there are pictures of photographers, of course, and news people who go down, and everything looks and feels like a ghost town. I live on Malcolm X Boulevard, which is the longest drag or the longest street in Harlem in New York City on Manhattan. And my bedroom window faces the street. And so the street is normally incredibly busy. It's like thinking about Belgravia, with the buses and the cars going up and down Belgravia Road looking like that, or the kids coming out of school and walking. So there's always constant traffic. And now it's just like deathly and ghostly, and you'll see maybe 5 or 6 people, on the street. So it's definitely very, very different. If you have any idea of what New York looks like on a daily, and I live in the center of New York City, I live in the city, it's very stark to see how, like, dry and, like, there's nobody out. Everybody who goes out is covered. People are wearing, you know, masks and gloves and, like, so that we can get back inside really quickly.
The government has enforced another 30-day stay-at-home order, basically.
Right.
But it also appears that the people of New York in particular, they appear to be a little bit more disciplined this time around.
Yeah, I think the scary fact is that people are literally dying by the hundreds overnight. Like, over last night, there were 432 deaths in New York City, and the night before was 536. We have been, we literally are almost 40% of the U.S.'s death just in the city, so not the state. So it's interesting to hear you say that you saw that the government has mandated, but that's not how it works in the U.S. So each state governor, and so for the most part, each state has been doing their own thing because the president has said, the governor of that particular state gets to mandate how the state is run.
Okay.
So there are still a few states in the country, like in the middle part and towards the south, where they only just imposed the lockdown today. But our governor imposed it 3.5 weeks ago and closed the schools 2.5 weeks ago. My kids are at university. I have a senior and a junior. That's somebody who's in their last year and their second to last year. My kids are 22 and 20. And so they go to school in another state in Rhode Island, which is like 3 states away. It's closer to Boston or Providence.
Right.
And they came for spring break at in like the 15th of March. And then when they were home, they got an email to say not to come back to school until Easter. And then they got another email a week later to say there will no longer be school to come back to for this academic year. So until May, there will be nothing. Mm. Everything will happen online. And the same has happened at my university. So we do teaching online. You know, the U.S. is a little bit more advanced, and so people have access, and so kids are doing homework and meeting via Google Classroom or the Zoom app, and so people are on the video screens doing our schoolwork and stuff. So it's really interesting.
It's really interesting.
Incidentally, my husband is an ICU nurse at the local municipal hospital in Harlem, at Harlem Hospital. Right. And so he works directly with the COVID patients. And so it's very interesting when he gets home, we have to spray him down and he goes into the shower. We've taken everything out of the shower so that it's just the bare tiles, right? So nothing else, no shampoos, nothing good sticks to plastic. So like he's super paranoid and super
I can only imagine.
When he gets home because he literally works. And even in the hospitals, it's so horrific. I was talking to my dad this afternoon that there is no more space in the hospital morgues. And so at the hospital that he's at, and it's literally two roads from our apartment, they are using, like, you know, the delivery trucks, but the refrigerated delivery trucks.
Yes, yes.
To store people's bodies in.
Wow.
And so it's very grim. In New York City, where we worry that the nurses and the doctors are having what they call PPE, which is the personal protection gear.
Yeah.
And I saw today, I follow the news in South Africa very closely. I saw that in I can't remember the township, but they shot rubber bullets at nurses because they were protesting that there are not enough coverage. And it's very much the same thing here in New York City, where nurses are protesting because they are asked to go into spaces where they are not protected with visors or, you know, the proper masks or all the things that they need. So it's really crazy. Mm. It's wild.
But I also just wanted to get, you know, your personal take on how the Trump administration has handled this crisis.
I think it's a failure. I think he didn't pay attention to what we knew from Korea, from China, from Italy, from Spain. And, you know, initially he had come out and said he thought that it was a hoax, that it was a Democratic Party hoax because it's election year. And then he had to backtrack on that because clearly people were dying. And then he said, oh, he thinks it's going to be over in a couple of weeks. By Easter, we should be fine. And then, of course, he had to backtrack on that because people are dying in exponential numbers.
Right.
And so what he's done is that he's given each governor the right, for example, to buy their own PPE for the health workers, and also the ventilators that are needing. And so my husband laughs because I said to him, he made it into a freaking Hunger Games, right? You know the movie Hunger Games?
Yes.
Because now the governor are bidding against other states. So New York is bidding against Massachusetts, is bidding against North Carolina, is bidding. So the prices for the ventilators go up because there is money in it, right? So it's a capitalistic venture. And so it's very interesting because people are there now also finding out that Trump and his cronies and people in the top executive have shares in these companies. So as people are dying, they are making money out of the profits from these places. And so that is a very, very vile reality of a capitalistic society that we are seeing displayed here.
Right. Now one of the things...
Know,
yes. Thank you so much for that, Marcel. I want to also sort of look at, you know, Moody's here in South Africa. They've downgraded South Africa to junk status since the lockdown. How are New Yorkers sort of concerned about the financial impact of this pandemic were they finding themselves in?
Very concerned. They have literally never had in all of its history where people have applied for unemployment, so much so that the online site has crashed. And when people are laid off or what they call furloughed, so what to be furloughed means where your boss tells you, we will be able to pay you again in 3 months. And so don't come in for 3 months, and hopefully in 3 months we can re-employ you. Wow. So Americans will apply for unemployment, but you can't even get onto the site to register for it because it's so busy. Mm. They have had unprecedented amount of people. And it's like you think of like the laborers and the people who work in takeaways, in deliveries, in these people are losing their jobs. And so it's like they will not be able to make that money up. Right. So the level of poverty is dropping. The Dow Jones is dropping. It's just, it's crazy, and it's frightfully scary because like, for example, around the corner from us, we have a little diner that, you know, is owned by a Dominican guy. I like to go there. I like to support the local people. Right. But like the guy who works at the counter, his wife works in the restaurant as a waitress, right? And so you think in their family, they have two kids. There is no income in that house anymore. Mm. And he's in the Bronx, right? So you think of how quickly and how people, I speak to people even in like higher and upper middle level management, people are losing their jobs because nobody can sustain. So if it's not a job that can be maintained online or through technology, then there is no way to sustain that.
Wow.
You
spoke about, you know, like to support locals, you know, and I think that is very, very, you know, patriotic and nice actually to do so. But let's talk about, you know, South African expats, you know, in terms of how it is that they might be feeling right now. Is there sort of a sense of comfort that you can find in one another during this time, considering, of course, the social distancing and you cannot have physical contact?
Right.
You know, is there perhaps a yearning for them to come home, or are they just okay to stick it out in the U.S. right now?
I mean, at this point, we can't really leave. I wouldn't get on a plane. And I mean, I'm married to an American now, but even if I thought that I would come home, I wouldn't get on a plane for 16 hours. I don't know who's on that plane with me. I think that's just in terms of a health risk. That's just crazy, right? Like, you don't know. You come through Europe, who's on that plane, where they come from, and being confined in a small space with people. And you don't know, because the virus can be carried by people who are perfectly healthy, right? You can be carrying the virus and be perfectly healthy and have no symptoms, but you can pass it on. So that's dangerous. And I think in South Africa, we're a great group, especially in New York. Our consulate here does all kinds of things. So we're always arranging functions and braais when it's summer, and the consulate in December has a memorial function on the day that Nelson Mandela passed, for example. So we all kind of know each other, and there are a lot of Cape Townians, especially in New York City, and people from the Cape Flats. So we all hang out together. We have this older guy from Manenberg, Isaac, and he's been here for 35 years, and he's like everybody's big Buddha, right? So like Isaac will call and do like a group voice thing, or he'll send a little picture and a meme or something from Funny Cup, and then we'll all laugh or we'll call together and we'll have a group and we talk a little Afrikaans, and we find comfort in each other. And it's true, you know, that being away from home is hard as a general rule. I think people always think if you live in the U.S., it must be wonderful and glamorous. And sometimes it's just not so glamorous and you work your butt off. But there is comfort in people from home knowing who you are, and you know, Isaac's going to check in and see how we are. And then, like, we're a lot of younger women who came here in different, you know, forms and shapes over the years. And so I have a whole South African family here in New York City, and we look out for each other because we have to check, they're all right.
Exactly.
Of course, they're not big. Right? So then, Batmakela. Somebody will, you know, when I have a friend who lives in Brooklyn, and she sews. She made us all masks. So Toti het die pakkette uitgestuur en sê sy familie julle het goed gekry. Maak toe julle bekke daarso. Moenie dit goed inasem nie. Like, funny, she knows it's me and my husband and my two boys. So she sent us 4 masks, and everybody said, "Wit nog lappers, see for me die lappers." Kafas naai so dat jy goed kan ons 'n mond toe maak en ons goed in asemhaal nie. And it's like, it's so heartening to have that. Or somebody said, But Dylan, he spices his tea, he spices my money to say now, obviously.
Right, right.
It's a pretty funny mother-in-law's tongue. Don't fail or, you know, whatever, because it's just, it's home and
yeah.
We hold on to things that are dear to us.
Now we can appreciate that, yeah.
It's dark. It's dark.
Yeah, you know? Prof, I'm going to have to leave it there. It's been wonderful chatting to you, Professor Marcel Mentor.
Lovely
the Regina from Makassar. I just wanted to say, Prof, that I absolutely love the fact that although you've been there for 15 years, you can still speak the Afrikaans language with so much passion. Well done.
Oh, we love it. And I teach my kids, and it's so funny because we always laugh, us South Africans, when we get people and they've been here for 2 weeks and then skillet vital ni patus no gesit in Afrikaans. As if you now can forget where you're from.
Please be safe and you know, please do keep in touch. Thank you so much for your time this morning. Bye bye.
Will do. Thank you so much. Bye bye.